Thank you very much, Deirdre, for that kind introduction. Can I commence by acknowledging the State President of CEDA Western Australia, Mr. John Paulson. Thank you for your company over lunch, John. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to come along here today. And can I say to you, Tom Baddeley, as I cast my eye over the assembled throng of cameras here, that compared to when I was at CEDA last year, you've obviously done a good job in lifting the profile of the organisation. It's often said, and perhaps too often, that a week is a long time in politics. This time last week, I was in the Kimberley, having finished a lightning visit through the Pilbara and then on into the Kimberley. This week, I stand before you in slightly different political circumstances, but I wanted to make an observation, and that is that often in politics, it is the more spectacular aspects, the humbug, the gossip of the political animal that I'm involved with, that captures the media and the public's imagination. I'm not complaining about that. It's part of the job and it comes with the territory. But it's also the fact that there's a far more important role for members of parliament, and that is to raise and debate serious public policy issues. And so I'm here today at CEDA to talk to you about some serious public policy issues facing the long-term future of Western Australia. And I'm glad I get an opportunity to do it here at CEDA, because since its formation in 1960, CEDA has been responsible for tackling many of the big issues that face this nation and this state, and has been responsible for delivering many of the big ideas that have delivered solutions to those specific issues. You know, Sir Douglas Copeland, who was one of the original founders of CEDA, produced the Premier's Plan. The Premier's Plan was a very important document which helped this country through the Great Depression. He had a vision for an economically strong nation with a strong public sector focused on building and sustaining productivity. And in many ways, the foundation of CEDA was part of his vision for the long-term future of Western Australia. And he left this nation, through CEDA, a very strong and powerful legacy. I'll just share some examples with you. CEDA was one of the first organisations in this nation to realise the value that skilled immigration could play and subsequently has played in the economic development of this nation. It was a CEDA policy paper that first outlined a methodology to formulate your immigration policies for skilled migrants based on a points system. That is a system which has been used successfully in Australia. It's a system which is now being used around the world and is currently the centre of immigration policy debate in a number of other countries. It was CEDA back in the 1960s who raised the argument that if Australia was to grow and prosper, it needed to strengthen its economic links to Southeast Asia. It was CEDA who have tackled a range of other significant major issues facing our nation in areas of taxation, infrastructure, water policy, to name a few. CEDA has been a forum for 50 years for big ideas that have had a big impact on the future of this nation. And in many ways, in the time I have available to you today, I want to talk about some big ideas that we need at the moment in Western Australia. Look, it's true that from time to time, governments need to be focused on consolidation and they need to be focused on management as opposed to vision and big ideas. There are times when you need to manage your way through difficult economic circumstances. There are times when you need to take stock and consolidate some of the gains that you have made, whether that be as a state or as a nation. But let's be clear. The state and extent, or the nature and extent of change that has occurred in this state in the last 7 years demands big ideas from the state government at this time. Demands that the government throw off the shackles in terms of public policy development and embrace big ideas to take this state forward into the 21st century. In 2001, when Labor came to power in Western Australia, there was a sense that the state was headed for a sustained period of low economic growth. What you had was a state government who were timid in their approach to fiscal management and expenditure on core economic and social infrastructure, and you had in place a state government whose view of the economic future of this state was one of low growth, if any growth at all. But I don't need to tell you that since 2001, there have been massive changes to the state's economy. The sad reality is that those changes have been largely driven by the private sector in this state, who have responded magnificently to the economic impetus provided to us by the industrialisation of China. The sad reality is, though, that public policy development has not kept pace with the changes that have been driven by the private sector. And of course, I say that in reflection of the government, but I also say that in reflection of the opposition. We in opposition have a fundamental responsibility to those that elect us to debate these more significant, long-lasting, visionary public policy issues. I just want to share some figures with you to paint an idea of how the state's changed. 7 years ago, the iron ore industry in WA was worth about $5 billion. The petroleum and gas industry is worth about $10.5 billion, and the nickel industry just over $2 billion. Now, the iron ore industry's tripled, $16 billion. Petroleum industry has increased significantly, and the nickel industry has almost quadrupled to almost $8 billion in value. Last week, as indicated in my opening remarks, I travelled to the Pilbara and to the Kimberley to see firsthand what these figures look like up close and in real life. And I just, for a couple of minutes, want to share with you what I saw. In each of the areas I visited, I saw the dramatic changes that have occurred in this state over the last 7 years, and I came to understand that the changes we've seen thus far are set to continue, at least in the short to medium term. In the Pilbara, I visited BHP's mine, Mount Whaleback mine at Newman. I went down to Dampier and visited Rio Tinto's port facilities, visited Woodside's, or should I say the Northwest Shelf's gas facilities, took some time to go down to Barrow Island and had a look at what Gorgon had planned there. Massive increases in the export capacity of Western Australia. Travelled to the Kimberley and received briefings on Browse Basin gas developments and came to understand the huge impact that that will have on the Kimberley as a region. But I also saw firsthand that the planning and the capacity building that the private sector has been involved with in Western Australia has not been matched by social capacity building and economic planning by the state government. In Dampier, for example, I learnt that private homes, 3- and 4-bedroom private homes, Dampier and Karratha, are renting for around $2,000 a week. Now, $2,000 a week is a reasonable rent to pay if you live in London or New York, but in a small regional town in Western Australia, it is beyond belief. And this has significant social impacts for families who can't live and raise their families in those areas, and it has significant social impacts for regional development in our state moving forward in a sustainable way. In Karratha, the epicentre of the state's minerals boom, I met pregnant mothers who can't have their babies in their hometown, who have to travel, I don't know, 450 or 500 kilometres to Port Hedland and back to deliver a child, taken away from their partners and their support network because essential health services have not been provided to the people of that region. And in Broome, I spent some time last Thursday, in fact, talking with police officers who discussed with me the significant and devastating impacts of alcohol on Indigenous communities across the Kimberley, a true tragedy, and who spent time with me explaining the law and order issues that confront people in the Kimberley. And this is the picture, in many ways, of what is happening in Western Australia today. Western Australia, the state with the largest landmass in Australia, yet a state which finds ourselves in the middle of a housing crisis driven effectively by a lack of land. A state which is generating record budget surpluses which can't provide adequate health care for the very people working so hard to generate those surpluses, and a place where the values that we are all proud of are not being supported by an adequate enforcement of law and order right across the state. These problems were avoidable. These problems were not inevitable, and it is my contention that they are a direct result of a failure to plan over the last 7 years by this government. The reason rents are high in Dampier and Karratha is the same reason that rents are going through the roof in Perth, as I indicated earlier, a fundamental failure of the state's land approvals process, which resulted in an almost complete evaporation of land supply during 2005, which saw the median house price in Perth go from $260,000 to $460,000 between December 2004 and December 2006. A situation which saw Western Australia become one of the most expensive places to live in Australia. The reason hospital services in Karratha are inadequate is the same reason that hospital services across the state are inadequate. The government has lacked the vision and the determination and the boldness of character to invest in infrastructure. Not one new hospital has been constructed in this state since 2001. And the reason crime and antisocial behaviour is a major issue in the Kimberley is the same reason that crime and antisocial behaviour is a major issue across metropolitan Perth and the regional towns of the southwest. A failure to adequately resource our police services and a failure to adequately crack down on those who choose to flout the rules of this state. What we have in Western Australia is a need to change public policy to meet the changes of our time. When you visit areas like the Pilbara and the Kimberley, you see that these changes are set to continue. These changes present wonderful opportunities for our state, but they also present wonderful challenges. If we're to meet these challenges, we have to start embracing some big ideas and coming up with some new solutions for Western Australia. As Deirdre indicated in her introduction, we think that the long-term future of this state is based around achieving three objectives. Firstly, to making Western Australia a true international hub for our resources sector. Western Australia needs to become to the resources sector what Hollywood is to the film industry, a must place to be. We have to diversify our services sector and we have to invest in our human capital base. Western Australia's human capital stock and our capacity to invest and enhance it is perhaps our greatest single strategic asset as we set sail into the 21st century, and we have to focus on ensuring that we maintain a world-class quality of life here in Western Australia. It is fundamentally important to our economic success. We have to protect our environmental assets and nurture them. We have to protect and build our sense of community, and we have to deliver the social infrastructure that people expect. I believe that this is the vision we need to lay out if we're to lock in the benefits of the boom and build on the opportunities presented to this state at the moment. Today, we're releasing this document. Thought I'd better give it a plug. There's a few cameras here. This document, Building a Lasting Vision for Western Australia. In this document, I've attempted to outline some of the challenges facing Western Australia. And some of the policy issues and potential policy solutions that government may embrace as part of that process. Now, it's too early for me today to stand up here and make specific commitments in relation to policy. But this document, I hope, will start to give the business community, the public sector, the people of this state, an idea of the direction in which we wish to head. And I think that this document presents a major step forward in our thinking on significant policy issues. Over the next few months, we'll consult broadly in relation to some of the matters contained in this document, and we'll firm up our ideas as to where we want to take the state. But today I just want to talk about three of the issues raised in the document, the significant public policy issues. Firstly, if we're to truly make Western Australia a global hub for the minerals and energy sector, then we have to ensure that Western Australia is a great place to do business. We have to understand that resources is the fundamental economic driver of this state, and the key to the ongoing success and sustainability of the resources sector is not to get carried away with everything that's happened to date, but to make sure the state remains as a competitive, attractive destination for international capital and for international businesses to come and do business. I'm shocked to understand that there are as many applications for mining exploration sitting on the desk of DUA as there have been, or almost as there has been, applications issued. I was reading recently the Fraser Institute, their index or their survey of mining companies. And the Fraser Institute pointed to two very interesting aspects of doing business in Western Australia. In 2003, we were ranked one as a preferred destination to do business. Now we're ranked 27th. Our ranking for duplication and inconsistencies within the approvals process has in the same period of time gone from 6th to 24th. Now, when you meet with businesses and talk with them, you understand that they have a very strong grasp of what they need to do to meet their commitments to the environment and to our Indigenous populations in the areas they do business. It is fundamentally front and centre in the way they do business. What we have to do in government, in our public policy settings, is empower them to do what they want to do in those areas, but also empower them to move ahead, to invest, and to do business in Western Australia. And over the next couple of months, we'll be working very closely with industry, both in the resources sector and in the property sector, to make sure that some of those fundamental impediments to the approval system are swept away. I'm also very concerned, as are my colleagues, that the state does not have an energy plan. And the lack of this plan is one of the key reasons that we face significant challenges in delivering on our energy requirements. Western Australia has an abundance of gas. Western Australia has an abundance of coal. We have an abundance of the natural attributes that we require to invest in sustainable energy. And yet we don't have... I thought I should throw that in, Wayne, about coal. I saw you there looking very worried at me. Mr. Wayne Trumbull from Griffin Coal, ladies and gentlemen. It was written down. And yet, as a state, we don't have, or we've failed to develop a comprehensive, overarching energy plan to guide us in terms of where we are headed, how we will transmit our energy, and what we need to invest in. I'll just give you one example. Recently, Western Australians attempting to purchase wholesale gas are now looking at paying three times as much as businesses operating in the eastern states. It's also a fact that in some instances, people purchasing gas in Western Australia are paying more for that gas than people who effectively purchase the same molecules of gas internationally. This is an issue that concerns me, the availability of and cost of gas supplies and indeed energy across the state. To address it, we need a comprehensive, overarching state energy plan. It's something we are heavily committed to delivering on. We need to secure Western Australia's long-term energy supplies. We need to coordinate the provision of infrastructure, and we need to make sure the state maintains a diversified energy mix as we move into the 21st century. The final element I want to talk about is the critical importance of ensuring that we focus on maintaining the quality of life here in Western Australia. As I said, our quality of life is a fundamentally important contributor to our economic success, and it is vital that we do all that we can to retain families in Western Australia and continue to attract people from elsewhere into this state. We need to put in a framework that combines infrastructure, services and other support mechanisms that makes Western Australia stand out as a place that people want to stay in and want to move to locate themselves and their families. Too often last week when I was in the north, I spoke to young ladies who said to me that they really enjoyed the economic opportunities to work in the north of the state, but when it came time to raise a family, they would leave and they would move back to Sydney, Melbourne, Auckland and other places. And this is a message which is repeated to me often, and it is a significant challenge to our state moving forward, and it's something that we need to tackle. If we cannot attract and maintain families in our cities and our regional towns, then the economic prosperity that we're currently enjoying will not be transferred into long-term, sustainable, livable communities. One of the measures I think we need to be looking at seriously is the provision of some form of state-funded paternal leave. There are a variety of models of paternal leave already in operation in various developed economies around the world. But so far, the Australian federal government, and I don't believe any other states in this country, have attempted to implement a system of paid paternal leave. The basic principle is this, that the state reimburses employers for providing a period of paid leave around the birth of a child, or in some jurisdictions, the adoption of a child. This can be funded either directly via government payment or through an insurance-based system, as is the case in Canada. Of course, this is a proposal which has associated with it significant cost. I'll give an example. In New Zealand, the government fund 14 weeks of paid paternal leave paid at 100% of earnings. With a population of 4.1 million people, the estimated cost in New Zealand is around 95 million New Zealand dollars per annum. The University of South Australia had a look at the issue of paid paternal leave, and their calculation was this. If we paid people at the federal award minimum wage for 14 weeks, it would cost the state $30 million. The introduction of paid paternal leave in Western Australia is a big idea. It has benefits. It would dramatically improve conditions for families struggling to balance home life and work life. It would make sure that more young women continue to participate in the labour market. And I think it would help make Western Australia a far more attractive place for families to move and settle. Now, I'm not going to make the mistake of rushing to commit to paid paternal leave today before doing the hard work, but it is certainly an idea that warrants thorough investigation in our state as we enjoy the economic success that we are. We will consult with employers to ensure that any system does not impose onerous burdens on them, and I am particularly concerned to make sure that small business is not disadvantaged. and we'll work through the costings of any system with my team to make sure that the state can afford it. And I'll also be mindful of what the Commonwealth Government are doing in this area. But I strongly believe that this type of system, paid paternal leave, is one of the big ideas that Western Australia needs to start embracing from a public policy perspective if we are to attract and retain the people to this state that we need to sustain our economic growth into the future. I'd just like to close with a couple of observations. As a Member of Parliament, I represent the electorate of Vass, comprises the towns of Busselton, Dunsborough and soon to be included Margaret River. As a Member of Parliament, your focus tends to be on your local area. As the leader of the State Parliamentary Liberal Party, I've had and am having an opportunity to travel right around this state. You start to change your focus, and when you change your focus, you realise just how big this state is. Not just big in size, but also big in terms of the things that are happening here in Western Australia. It is a tremendously exciting time for the state. And the time has come for government, for state governments, to start embracing some of the big ideas that this state needs so that we can tackle the opportunities that have been presented to us. For far too long, this state government has been prepared to sit back and surf a wave of economic success that others have generated. But when we look around the state, you see areas now where increasingly we are starting to fall behind. In a state like ours, with the wealth that this state is generating, there are no excuses for this. Ideas matter. Big ideas can change communities. They can change societies and they can change economies. Western Australia is the biggest state in the country. And the time has come to embrace big ideas to match our great state. Thank you very much.